Welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. My name's Dr. Andrew Tresidder from NHS Somerset, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, GP and NHS Somerset Clinical Lead for Mental Health.
And it gives us great pleasure today to welcome Rain Smith, who comes from Talking Therapies in Somerset. Rain, tell us a bit about yourself, please.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, everyone. I'm a high-intensity cognitive behavioral therapist. I've been doing this for about 5 years and worked in mental health for around about 10 years, almost 10 years now, doing various odd jobs before my CBT training. And I've recently just qualified as a mindfulness-based cognitive therapy teacher as well.
Rain, you've already thrown an acronym at us that our listeners might not know, CBT. Do you want to tell us what CBT is and just unpack a bit of the other alphabet stew of talking therapies that are out there?
We have quite a significant alphabet stew to untangle. But yeah, I'll start off with CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. Probably the best way to describe it is it kind of says what it does on the tin, in the sense that cognitive refers to what is happening in the mind. So basically your thoughts, your beliefs, your interpretations of things, even mental images or pictures. The B stands for behavioral or behaviors, what you do. And in general, this is what you would be able to see someone doing. So if you're a fly on the wall, but it could also encompass more covert behaviors, things we might be doing in our own minds, like trying to push away thoughts and suppress things as well. Ultimately, the therapy is about feeling better. And the route to that in CBT is changing the way we think and changing what we do.
And that's really interesting introduction. I have a lot of patients who I suggest talking therapies to, and they say, oh, well, I went for counselling, and the person just sat and said, how do you feel? Now, and that puts them off because it didn't really do very much, whereas talking therapies now have a real evidence base, don't they? So do you want to tell us, I explain it as physiotherapy for the brain, but how would you explain it to people? And can you tell us a bit about the evidence base behind it?
Yeah, well, the creation of the Talking Therapies service was actually a national thing started in 2008. And the idea was to bring evidence-based therapies, so therapies that are grounded in good research and high-quality research and a substantial amount of research to everyone. Because before 2008, it was very difficult to find a well-qualified therapist. And if you did, you probably had to pay, whereas in our service is completely free. There is a substantial amount of evidence backing up all of our therapies, and all of our therapists are trained to the national specifications. And also, we have to be accredited, which means that we effectively have to be accountable to a professional body and monitored. So we all have to have our continuing professional development, basically our continuing of practice of skills up to date every year, and be adequately supervised. So looked over by a senior therapist, and that they make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
And recently NICE, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, have just updated their guidelines for depression. And they've confirmed, haven't they, that CBT and other talking therapies are better than medication for mild to moderate depression. So it's not just gobbledygook, is it? This is stuff that really works.
Absolutely, yeah. The NICE guidance is what guides our interventions and our care as well. Certainly in my experience, and certainly the research points to talking therapies being just as good, if not better, than some antidepressant medications.
Thanks very much. That's really helpful. Talking therapies sort of conjures up possibly being in the same room as somebody, or on the telephone, or online. How is it working these days?
Well, the COVID-19 pandemic had a significant impact on how we worked. Previously, we primarily did our work either via telephone. We also did online groups. So we had the foundations of online video work established and face-to-face. So sitting in a room with a therapist or in a group, if that was if it was a group course. Since the pandemic, we've adapted to the requirements, and we offer a huge proportion of our work via online video link. We still offer face-to-face work, particularly for people that have difficulties with their technology, or there's problems with their internet connections and so on. And we also try to, as best we can, work with people's preferences as well.
So what sort of people do you feel would benefit from talking therapies? And are there any groups that maybe aren't coming forward that you'd like to see more of? I know, yeah, older people in particular, there's a bit of an issue with, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I think we would love to see more older people referring into our service, and people from different ethnic backgrounds as well. I guess the thing that we want to make quite clear to everyone is that we really work hard to tailor as best we can our interventions to suit the person. Generally, we are set up to help people with anxiety disorders and depression, and we also work with people with long-term physical health conditions who may also be struggling with a mental health difficulty at the same time. A large proportion of our practitioners are trained to work with people with long-term physical health conditions as well. So we don't just look at the mental health side, we look at the physical health side as well and try to take a holistic approach.
Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned anxiety and depression, Rain, because that sort of springs to mind as the sort of thing that I, as a doctor, might wish to refer to your service. Two questions, really. If I'm a patient, if I'm somebody with anxiety and depression, not necessarily a patient, but somebody just in life, do I need to see a doctor to be referred, or can I self-refer? And the second question is, perhaps you could give a sort of a thumbnail sketch of a typical person with anxiety and depression, the sort of things that are coming up for them, as sort of maybe a synthesis of half a dozen people that you might have seen, but obviously not identifiable. But you know, just help us understand. So, firstly, what's the route in? Does it need to be medicalized via one's own GP, or can we access talking therapies direct? And what sort of common problems are the presentation that might come under the heading of anxiety and depression?
Yeah, well, you definitely do not have to see a GP or a medical professional to be referred into our service. You can self-refer, and you can do that very easily by going to our website. Probably the easiest ways to get there is just Google Somerset Talking Therapies, and we will generally be the first hit. I believe that we may be able to put the link to our website and our newly refurbished website, by the way. So anyone who's tried to access our website in the past and had trouble, we have made changes to that. So you can do that online. We've also introduced a new initiative, which is called Direct to Digital. So we know that there's a good evidence base backing up digital CBT. So this is CBT basically done on a self-help basis, where you work through modules on your own. And this is another thing that you can refer directly into through our website. So you don't actually have to go through an assessment session with us where we would talk through your difficulties and find out what's going on. You can go straight into that and give it a shot. And you'll also be receiving support while you do that. And then, of course, that may be a springboard into other things too. You can give us a ring, and if you don't get on with technology, give us a call, and we'll put the number as well somewhere, I'm sure, for people to access. It's also on the website. And we can then send out a referral form, which you can complete and send back to us if you prefer the snail mail method. You can, of course, speak to your GP. They can refer you into us as well, or any medical professional is able to do that too. And they can also do it online. So typical sort of, this is an amalgamation of all the people I've worked with throughout my career. So if it bears any similarities to anyone in particular, I assure you this is just the sort of typical patients we tend to work with. So someone with depression will generally have been feeling quite low down. Sometimes you may call it depressed, but some people might call it feeling the blues, or just feeling low. And particularly that comes with a sort of sense of getting very little pleasure or interest when they're doing things. They lose sight of some of the things that they used to enjoy. And this typically has been going on for a while, and it doesn't feel like anything's going to get better anytime soon. So that would be the sort of a very generic, basic presentation of depression. Someone with an anxiety problem. So there are around about 7 anxiety, specific anxiety disorders that we tend to work with. So you may be able to hear my 2-year-old just got back from nursery there. Apologies for that. There are 7 anxiety disorders that we tend to work with. And primarily that would be with cognitive behavioral therapy. So we're trained on specific models that apply to those anxiety disorders. I guess the most common one will be probably generalized anxiety disorder, where someone is quite consumed by worry a lot of the time. So they'll be worrying a lot about various different topics, and often the worries will be quite catastrophic. And then that then leads them to feel very anxious, usually feeling like they can't really function in their daily life, or at least their functioning starts to deteriorate. And that would be another quite typical presentation as well.
That's a really helpful thumbnail sketch for anyone who thinks they might want to access your services. And I'm delighted to hear that you've tried to make your service as accessible as possible. Thinking about that, one of the barriers that patients often say to me that puts them off going to talking therapies are concerns about confidentiality. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, of course. Generally, what we speak about within the talking therapy service and between our patients stays within the service, and usually their GPs. Now we do try to work with people on that, and sometimes there are limitations to that. So we try our best to make it as confidential as possible. There are limitations to that confidentiality, and as you probably both know, we are required by law to break confidentiality if there's a danger to someone else or to that patient themselves. Now, what that usually looks like is we have a discussion about that. We create a safety plan with that person, and we involve the necessary people together. We work as a team together, patient, therapist, and anyone else that needs to be involved. On the very rare occasion, we may need to go straight to the emergency services, for instance.
I'm glad you brought that up because, as a GP, you never quite know what's coming through the front door, and somebody may have a surface presentation that may look reasonably okay, but underneath it could be quite different. And so I suppose my question would be is how do you screen out something that the patient might think is mild to moderate depression or anxiety, but you get a feeling or your professional assessment tells you might be something else, and what do you do with that?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question, and it does happen occasionally. What usually happens is we tend to, so one of the kind of first things you would do when you've referred into our service is you'd have an assessment session. This is kind of like a triage assessment where you'd speak with a practitioner, a qualified practitioner, and we try and find out what your main symptoms are and what your goals are for therapy. We also run through routine safety questions. Hopefully at the end, we've come to a conclusion about what the goals are and what the plan is to continue. But occasionally, yes, things are things come to light that perhaps need addressing. Sometimes there may be domestic abuse situations going on, which can get in the way of therapy, of course. So we want to know about that. We want to try and support people as best we can, but also to include the specialists as well. And we work really closely with our safeguarding team, with domestic abuse services, with the community mental health team, who are the kind of the next level up. They're the secondary care mental health services as well, particularly when there's a problem that perhaps a brief talking therapy, which is what we offer, may not necessarily be sufficient.
That's so reassuring to hear. So if I were to come to your service because I thought it was a good idea or somebody had suggested it, but actually on assessment, you find that I have sleep disturbance, I have quite profound mood disturbance, particularly in the morning that lifts up over the day, that I've lost weight, that my appetite has gone, that I can't concentrate for more than a few minutes or watch a television program, and that I have some quite dark thoughts. That would probably not lead to engagement in just talking therapies. It would take me down a different track of saying, has this person got not just a mild or a moderate depression, but is it something quite different?
Yeah, well, I'd say we definitely do work with more severe presentations, but it's all about a kind of case-by-case basis. And part of the assessment process is really working with that person to find out if we are the right service, if we are going to be able to support them sufficiently. And usually that's also a decision they're involved with. At least we try as much as possible to make that so. Yes, but I'd say if there were significant difficulties with keeping safe, for instance, keeping oneself safe, then we probably would have to look at more suitable services for that, because ultimately we have our limitations. We're not an emergency service. And can't continue to monitor people, whereas secondary care may have a bit more resources on that front.
That's great to hear. And people, as you've said already, can refer directly through your website, which we'll put in the programme notes. There's a phone number, which is 0300 323 0033.
Yeah,
0033,
yeah.
And also through Mindline and Open Mental Health, referrals could come that way. And I gather you offer some courses as well that may help people.
Yes, yeah. So I think people are, a lot of people get a bit, they contract and they get a bit put off by the idea of group courses. But actually, our courses are not group therapy. They're more what we call psychoeducational courses. So it's more about trying to teach people some of the skills and strategies that they can use. Not only that, but teach them about depression or anxiety or their long-term health condition, for instance, and trying to kind of help from that way around. It's also really good preparation for therapy. Now, if you think about it, we're a brief talking therapy service. Our therapies are brief, but if you can try and get through a course, you might have a really good foundation to make the most of the therapy. That's not to say that everyone needs to do that, but it can be a really good kind of preparation phase. We have a few courses. We have a CBT Skills for Life course, which kind of teaches you some generalized CBT skills. We also have a stress management course, which is really helpful for people who struggle with various stresses, which is also grounded in CBT. We have a long-term health conditions course for people who struggle with their health and also their mental health alongside that. And we also have more sort of higher intensity courses, in the sense that they tend to be smaller courses and a bit more focused. So we have what's called a behavioral activation course, which is basically all about how we can effectively defeat depression through changing our behavior through our activity. And we know that by getting involved with things that we enjoy, that we get a sense of achievement from, can be hugely beneficial to lifting mood. As well as that, we might look at some of the core processes that maintain depression, like something like rumination, which is another way of putting it is kind of dwelling on things from the past, which is something that a lot of people with depression struggle with. And we look at quite interesting strategies to try and dismantle that rumination. And then we also have the mindfulness-based cognitive therapy group, which is primarily a relapse prevention course designed for people with recurrent depression, but has also been shown to be helpful for people with other problems as well. And that would be looking at meditation-based practices to help us to start to get to know our minds a bit better, to get to know the patterns of our minds a bit better. But also crucially, and I think this is something that's missed out, is in particularly with meditation practices, is we also look at how we can then use that knowledge that we gain from meditation practices to then change our behavior, to do things differently and make more wise and skillful choices in the service of our well-being.
I think that's really helpful overview of talking therapies. And although CBT is the mainstay for most people with mild to moderate depression, there are other talking therapies available, and you've touched on some of them. I wonder if, without overwhelming our listeners, if you can dip your toe a little further into the alphabet stew. For instance, people with personality disorder need CAT or DBT. Do you want to unpack those a little bit and tell us about those?
Yeah, well, we do not offer CAT, which would be cognitive analytic therapy, which is a bit of a blend of the more psychodynamic approaches, the more the sort of therapies looking at how you relate to yourself and others, and it blends with a bit of cognitive therapy as well. DBT is dialectical behavioral therapy, which is a really interesting approach. It's what's called a third wave CBT. So it's an offshoot of CBT. And that primarily looks at skills around interpersonal relationships, managing emotions, and learning to regulate your emotions, and problem solving. They also include a bit of meditation as well within that. Now, that would be something that would be probably more offered in the sort of community mental health team level, secondary care level. We offer a variety of other therapies. So we have something called IPT, interpersonal psychotherapy, which is primarily a treatment for depression. And this, there are some similarities with CBT in that it's fairly here and now focused. So generally practitioners are working to help people in the here and now and not working too much on the past. But it's generally looking at relationships, and particularly when relationships may be at the kind of maybe the cause of the depression, or maybe part of the maintenance of depression. We also offer something called DIT, or dynamic interpersonal therapy. I think I've got that right. And that's something that we're building up our capacity in. So this would, I guess, be kind of similar to CAT in cognitive analytic therapy in some ways, in the sense that we are looking at people's the way they relate to others, but there's also a bit more of a focus on how our past might impact on the way we kind of navigate relationships and problems in the here and now. By the way, just to be clear, we don't ignore the past in CBT or IPT, and we absolutely bring it in when it's relevant. It's just that dynamic interpersonal therapy might have a bit more of a focus on this. You might have a bit more silence in DIT, I believe. So the therapist might sit back a little bit more and give you more space to kind of think through things and process and reflect. So that's not always helpful for people. Some people prefer a bit more of a structured and goal-focused therapy like CBT or IPT. We also offer something called EMDR, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is an interesting therapy primarily for PTSD, And it involves processing of traumas. And often they'll use a strategy called bilateral stimulation, which it comes in many forms, but what you would see is generally your practitioner moving their hand around in front of their patient's face, and the patient will be following the finger with their eyes from left to right. It may also involve tapping, so tapping left and right sides of the body, usually the knees. It can also involve sounds, I believe, and lights as well. But ultimately, I believe I'm getting this right in saying that the idea is that helps traumatic memories that may be kind of replaying in a person's mind, helps them to kind of get it unstuck and move on from them. And then we have the mindfulness-based cognitive therapy course, which is kind of a bridging between CBT and the meditation mindfulness approaches. I think I haven't missed anything out. Oh, probably an important thing to mention is we have guided self-help approaches as well, which are grounded in CBT. But these are more, they're sort of less intensive therapies, although they can be quite intense going through them. But generally, you're working on kind of single problems and generally working through a sort of workbook with a practitioner. I think that's pretty much it. I might think of a few more things we offer in a minute, but yeah, that's most of them at least.
That's a really fascinating and exhaustive overview of what's available. And just to reassure people, if they're feeling a little bit overwhelmed by our alphabet stew, they don't need to know this stuff. They just come along to you and they'll be slotted into whatever it's felt is the best. Is that right?
Yeah, we'll do our best to try and explain things in the most helpful way possible to try and help people to make sense of it. And we do try to we try to kind of put patients' choice at the forefront of any sort of decision making. And if you think about it, part of what we have to do as practitioners in the NHS is acquire informed consent. And in order to do that, you kind of need to know what you're getting into. It's not always possible because the therapies themselves are they have a lot of depth to them, and we were just scratching the surface of them. Hopefully, we 9 times out of 10 we get people on the right track. And of course, we try to be flexible within those tracks. So if something's not working, we're always looking at ways of how we can perhaps change things around and better support people.
And I have to say, with my commissioning hat on and looking at your results, you get really good results. You actually do get people better by talking, which seems amazing to me. I'd love that we can do that without using drugs. So you really do have that evidence base and can help people, can't you? So in the limited time we've got left, do you want to just remind people again how they contact you if they feel they've got mild to moderate anxiety or depression and would like to access talking therapies?
Yep, you can self-refer online by accessing our website, and you can Google talking therapies, Somerset Talking Therapies, and we're generally the first hit. If you want the web address, if you've got a pen and paper handy, it's www.somersetft.nhs.uk/somerset-talking-therapies. You can, of course, if you want to, refer through your GP or another medical professional. And if you prefer not to go down the technology route, you can give us a ring on 0300 323 0033, and we'll send out a referral form to you.
Rain, that's absolutely great. Thank you so much for coming along. I've sent many patients over the years to talking therapies. It's so nice actually to meet you and to have a discussion about it. And I had the privilege a few weeks ago of meeting you and some colleagues who do the same work as you do in person. And it's just great to know we have such a great team of professionals in Somerset who help those of us when we need help to access it easily and get great outcomes. So thank you very much indeed.
Well, thanks for having me. And I really hope that people feel confident and maybe even a bit comfortable now, having heard someone that may be on the end of the phone, if they ever do get in touch with us, to refer in.
Thank you, Rain. Absolutely fantastic.
Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for listening. All the very best and go well.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast, hosted by Dr. Andrew Tresidder and Dr. Peter Bagshaw. The show was created by David Seeley and was produced by Rob Hunt's Music on behalf of the Somerset Clinical Commissioning Group.